We're all spending more and more time out in our gardens growing some food. But to take true advantage of that, soil is key. As industrial farming falls by the toxic wayside, it's up to us to know what questions to ask in order to move forward into not only cleaner farming practices, but into the production of nutrient-dense foods. I read a series of articles recently by John Frank about the work of Dr. Carrie Reams, whose genius roamed deep into the soil and followed through into the hows and whys we have health. When I asked John if he'd speak to us, he said, "Well, you know, I'm just about nutrient-dense foods." "Bravo," I said, and here we are. I'm Robin, and this is Tributaries. John, your attention to your work is driven by nutrient-dense foods, as you've told me. Would you share a bit of your history that drove you in this direction?
Well, I've always had a real fascination with soil. It began at a very young age. I was in my teens and I would read a lot of books and about soil. I was also intrigued when I read in the Bible that it said Noah, being a man of the soil, planted a vineyard. So I thought, well, that's a discovery. So I was really excited about that. And I've just continued to study soil since I was in my teens. And the next step from there is food quality. And so that just was a natural progression.
Yes, and you were doing some projects over in India, weren't you?
I was. It was more related to mission work and to assisting in an organization that did work with schools, but they were working with a lot of poor people as well. But during that whole time, I never had lost my passion for soil, and I felt like at some point I needed to go back in and work in the field in soil. So that happened in 2001.
All right. Well, I know you've adopted the work of Dr. Carrie Reams. So before we move into where you have taken this work, would you share a little bit of Dr. Carrie Reams' work? And it's as potent for the farmer as it is for the medical doctor. And so in my mind, he's quite a visionary.
He was, and it's also very pertinent for anybody that eats, because he really helped to develop the idea of nutrient-dense foods. He was quite a student himself, and beginning very early on, he was asking a lot of questions. And one of the things that he read was the work of Julius Hensel, who wrote a book called Bread from Stones. And in that book is actually the whole message of nutrient-dense foods using old terminology. That work came out of Germany, and the guy was working with stone meal or rock powders to improve the soil. And so Dr. Reams took that, he added to it, he worked with some of his mentors who were working with soft rock phosphate and building up the soils in Florida. And so he continued and sharpened that message. And then he discovered a tool that could really evaluate where things were at, and that was the refractometer. So Dr. Reams worked with agriculture, restoring soil, and getting very healthy citrus. He started working with many other crops, and he was very good at it, where he could really judge the quantity of crops that would be harvested, and he would actually be able to anticipate the quality based on the fertility and the energy that he was putting into it. I haven't been able to duplicate that, but I do understand what he was doing.
Any good farmer can read his land like a book, and every day it's a new story and it's a new direction that you have to take in order to stay on top of this sort of thing.
That is true.
I like how in a recent series of articles you've written for Acres USA magazine, you pose the question, what is a plant? And you answer by stating it is an energy accumulator. And I'm wondering if you would describe this in more detail for us.
You know, when you start to think of a tomato plant, you start with a seed that is no bigger than a pinhead, really. And it grows, and in its potential, it can produce buckets and buckets of tomatoes. It's a really amazing thing to think about how it can start with a seed that small. And in the very simplest idea, plants are accumulating matter, they're accumulating heat energy, and they're converting it into a carbohydrate. They're accumulating energy from minerals, and even the electromagnetic flow under the surface of the Earth, the same force that would, say, drive a compass needle to the north, they're grabbing some energy from that. And so there's multiple sources of energy, and plants are just grabbing it. And then they have this great ability to reformulate it according to their DNA and their genetics and produce a crop. It's a very interesting way to define a plant, an energy accumulator that reformulates it according to its DNA. But it is very accurate, actually.
Yes, yes. And of course, we could explain that in the same way using the human body, couldn't we?
It also has to accumulate energy. You know, the plants have an operation where they have to work with the microbes to get what they need, which is pre-dissolved minerals, and then they exchange their carbohydrates. But for the human body, we can get our minerals and carbohydrates all together in the form of food. And so we have one source, whereas plants and microbes have to kind of team up together. We also have a microbial system in our digestive, but we're getting the energy and the minerals in one thing, which is food.
Yes. Now, I know that Dr. Reams's work focused on energy in three forms. There was the electromagnetic and heat and mass. And I feel like the ancients had a way to acknowledge and tap into the electromagnetic energy. But since science kind of commandeered farming and healthcare, we need to do a little bit of catch up somehow. So what can you share with us about electromagnetic energy? I mean, it puts a whole new spin on it for me when the birds and their song do a lot more than just show up, don't they?
They very much assist in that as well. I would look at a plant really kind of like a double antenna. You have the antenna above ground, and you have the antenna, which is the roots, below ground. So yes, on the physical level, those roots are feeding microbes, but they also are functioning as an electromagnetic antenna of sorts to receive the energy that's passing through those magnetic lines of force that are going through the surface of the soil. Now, if you have an adequate amount of carbons in your soil, that will allow the plant to receive more of that energy. So if you have a very poor soil, you don't get near as much. It's kind of like when you drive a car, you need both the gas and the brakes. Or if you have an electrical circuit, you have to have the resistors in there so that you get the right amount of electricity going through the circuit. And that carbons are providing that electricity so you can get more. On the surface, above the ground, the leaves are also receiving energy from the atmosphere. And it's more than just solar energy, although that's a very big one, but it can actually receive minerals and elements through the leaves. And we tap into that ability by foliar spraying, but there is a very diluted amount in the atmosphere. And so when you have a very healthy plant, you'll get more energy for free. And when you have a unhealthy plant, you'll have to get what you get only by what you put out in the soil with nutrients. So you want to put the nutrients out so that you get a healthier plant, so you get more for free. Okay, so that's kind of the epitome of Reams agriculture. If you take it to the ultimate, is you want highest level of fertility because you'll actually get more for free, both at the root level and in the leaves in the atmospheric environment.
Yes. Now, there is so much in that electromagnetic field. Obviously, it's invisible, and yet it feeds so much. I was reading recently about how plants do get so many nutrients from the air, from the carbon in the air, etc. And it's not unlike us when we walk barefoot on the earth, for instance. The earth is probably the best rod of energy that there is, I would imagine.
I would agree. And the truth is, I'm not going to pretend I understand all of it. I think we're still peeking through the keyhole. We're still learning. And there's whole worlds of discovery yet to be made. It's a fascinating world. And farmers really do play a very strategic, important role in all of this.
Well, it's pretty amazing that there are some very astute medical doctors working with the whole system. And of course, that's what a good farmer does, and they know that. I'm wondering how you go about this when you are working with soils, and then maybe how you would relate this to human healthcare.
Okay. Well, science will tell you that it takes 17 minerals to grow a crop, but there's a few more that are beneficial. But it wasn't that long ago that it was only 16 minerals. I talked to an older farmer, and when they first started farming, it was like, it only takes 12 minerals to grow a crop. Well, we're still learning, obviously. And so I kind of developed the understanding that we need to have full spectrum nutrition in our fertility program. We need major minerals, we need secondary minerals, we need trace minerals, and then we need the rare earth elements, or the everything else that we don't know. And so when I work with soils, I am trying to optimize all four of those. I look at this kind of like a baseball diamond. If you want to get a home run, you need to get through all four of those bases. And so I make a fertility program that addresses all four, and I use rock powders and some ocean products to provide that fourth base, which is the rare earth elements. Dr. Reams taught several ways of working with plants, and he was an early innovator in foliar feeding, supply nutrition through the leaves. So those would be a couple things that I would do to give a broader approach.
Yes, and I definitely feel like that's the case when you're able to take a walk by the beach. I feel like we get that energy from the ocean, and it just comes through the skin, and then you add the salt. Coming through my arm is kind of like doing a foliar spray, I think, to a plant.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, if you're talking the ocean, that if you look at the soil around an ocean, you get a lot of mineral, even iodine, coming off of the ocean. And as it rains in the coastal regions, that iodine goes into the soil. But the further you get away from the ocean, we have less and less iodine in the soil. And so it's really important to bring that to the Midwest soils. And so I use things like kelp meal and dried ocean water and even ocean fish. And the surprising thing is that the conventional science says you don't need to use iodine at all to grow a plant. Plants don't need it. And my response is, well, we're growing plants to feed animals and to feed people, and they certainly do need it. So let's get it out there.
Yes. And I'm wondering about the soil testings. Especially now they can be so specific and dead on as far as what elements are in the soil and how much there is and imbalance or not. But once again, this is a chemical test for a biological system. So how do you make up for that? Or is that even a ridiculous question? I'm just not sure.
There are many tests that can be done, and there's a lot of research that continues. But I think if you can boil it all down, there's two basic questions that you can ask of a soil test. And one test asks the question, what nutrients are in the soil? And the tests that I have worked with ask the question, what nutrients can the plant get? And so we want to make management decisions based off of what is biologically available to the plant. So we want to sift out kind of all the noise of the, it's there, but it's not available. It's kind of like an employee that shows up to work very faithfully, but doesn't get much done, right? You know, that isn't that helpful, right?
Right.
And so what we're after is to find out what can the plant actually get. And that process is actually nutrients applied. Okay, it has to go through microbial digestion, and then it enters into a reservoir of being available to the plant. Part of that is part of the biological protoplasm in the microbe system. I do agree that we are measuring with chemistry. We're deriving an understanding about the biology. But biology has to live in a physical environment, and so chemistry is important as well. It is not either or, it's an and. We have to look at biology and chemistry and physics.
Yes.
And they're all important.
Absolutely. And I was so happy to hear you bring up the BRICS part, because more and more people, especially in this day now, are getting into their yards and deciding, I think I'm going to grow a little lettuce. And then also people are going to farmer markets and going after the organic. But it's a big time now to let everyone know that organic doesn't necessarily mean nutritious. And I'm wondering what recommendations, or if there's some common sense about all of it for a home gardener, rather than, obviously the same principle would apply, but let's speak to the home gardener right now interested in growing good, healthy produce.
Okay. Well, first of all, if the BRICS is low, the flavor is poor. And if that's the case, just remember, it's not the plant's fault, okay? They're doing their absolute best to do their job, okay? So it's a matter of the environment that it's in. I would look at this very similar to a cake recipe. You know, if you have a bad recipe that has way too much baking soda and too much salt, it can look pretty good. It appears good. But when you actually start to eat it, it doesn't taste very good, right? And so if there's a problem with low BRICS, that's the problem of the recipe in the soil. It really is that simple. Now, it's not quite so simple to fix it, but it can be done. And for the home gardener, I would suggest working with a consultant that understands how to get to high BRICS and following the program.
And now, just real basically, how would you define BRICS? It's B-R-I-X, just for people who might not know that.
BRICS is based on a instrument that is called a refractometer, and it measures the bend of light. And so if you put a drop of the liquid, let's say you squeeze the juice out of a strawberry, and you put that liquid on a refractometer, all of the carbohydrates and the dissolved solids in that juice will bend. Okay, and so if it's more watery and less mineral and less sweet, it'll bend less. And if it's more concentrated in minerals and carbohydrates, it'll bend more. So you take an example of a hydroponic tomato that we know is terrible tasting and doesn't even look good, and a really good tomato that tastes good, the BRICS reading is going to be very different. You might see a 2.5 or 3 BRICS for the hydroponic tomato, and it might be a 8 or higher for a really good tasting tomato. And the BRICS and taste correspond really well. And this was the contribution of Dr. Reams. He discovered that the refractometer is useful for judging food quality.
I know, it's so brilliant and it seems so simple, and yet he's the one that it popped into his head.
You know, the BRICS chart, I don't know if you've seen, have you seen the BRICS chart?
No, I have not.
So we have a chart that you can download. That's at High BRICS Gardens. That's a website we have. And that chart has listings of the various fruits and vegetables, and even some forages and grasses a little bit. And it has poor, average, good, and excellent. So you can go and say, take your strawberry and then go check the chart and see whether it's a poor, average, good, or excellent. And the reality is almost all produce in the store is poor, maybe some average. That's the typical. Occasionally, you will find some good. Even whether it's conventional or organic, you will find some good occasionally. But you find it poor most of the time.
I know that's so true. And that's why I can't encourage everyone enough to grow a little something on your own and find your local farmer and talk to them. You know, obviously, a lot of the farmers around where I live, I know, are on top of all this stuff and doing their best for the soils. But the more questions we can ask, the more informed we are, then we're going to help inform everyone, aren't we? And that's the way things will change, right?
That is the way it changes. Do I have time for a quick story that kind of encapsulates everything we're talking about?
Please do. I'll make it fit.
Okay. I had a friend whose name is Ron Littleton, and he was following the garden program for several years. He liked his greens. Okay. And so what holiday he had, it was at Thanksgiving, and he had his family coming. So he went out to his garden, been on the program for several years, and he picked all these various greens, and then he tore them up into pieces, and then he had a bowl full of these mixed greens, so beet greens and all sorts of greens for a salad. And then people came, put the greens on, and then they put their toppings and dressing on. When it was over, he had just a little bit, and he put it in a bowl, and he thought, oh, I'll put it in the fridge. And he put it in the fridge, and that was Thanksgiving. On Christmas Day, he pulled his bowl out of the fridge and says, what is this? And he said, he found out, oh, it was a salad. And he said, seemed to be pretty good. I says, well? He says, well, what? I said, well, did you eat it? He goes, of course, it was good. And I
that's
like
another
say,
good sign.
And I like to say, kind of, don't try this at home. You know, normally you take a salad from Thanksgiving to Christmas and you eat at your own risk. It won't be a salad.
Right.
So that's the power of high quality food. It doesn't rot. It tastes good.
Yes, it does.
You have to give a lot of credit to Reams. He discovered a lot, and he consolidated a lot of other things that he pulled together. And that's kind of what I'm doing. I'm taking what he's did and consolidating a lot of other things. And I think in some ways, in some areas, I'm going, you know, to the next step. He always said, I'm only in kindergarten. You take it to first and second grade. He told his students that. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And we stand on the shoulders of the generations that guided us before.
Absolutely. And well, John, let me ask you this then. Where do you feel like you've been able to use Dr. Reams's information as a jumping off point? And what have you really driven further and been able to do because of the work of Dr. Reams?
I think Dr. Reams really laid out the parameters of checking food quality with a refractometer, and then he taught the theory on how to achieve that. Where I've made some improvements is in the presentation style in terms of explaining it. It's much easier. It's not so scientific and abstract. He went really in depth into like the nature of the universe level of depth. Okay. And then I have taken the principles, but I could, because I knew the principles he taught, I was able to recognize, oh, and a lot of things are clicking like that. For example, heat energy. All right. We had a product that always worked really good on plants, and it's a blend of neem oil, fish oil, karanja oil, and orange oil. Okay. And it's a mix of these oils, and it really helps against insects and disease because they all have some anti-pest properties in a natural form. Okay. And antifungal. But I know we always noticed whenever we used it, the plants, my goodness, they perked up. Whether there was pests or not, they perked up. It looked like you went through and you waxed the leaves almost. Okay. Well, if you stop and think about it, if you put this product on a fire, that's going to burn, actually, because it's all oil, right, with a little emulsifier in it. Well, what we were doing and didn't really recognize is we're actually adding a source of heat energy right to the leaf. We added heat energy directly, and the plants perked up. And another illustration of that same thing, I started studying about Romeo wood chips. And I had a pepper plant that had poor sunlight in the house. I was overwintering it, and it wasn't very productive because it kind of had indirect light. I applied a layer of Romeo chips, which is twigs and branches, 3 inches and smaller, chipped and shredded until it was super fine. Okay. I mulched with that. And within 2 weeks, I noticed the plant was blooming like crazy. It's like, well, why is that? The whole winter it didn't bloom. Oh, this is a release of heat energy. And so it supplemented, but I wouldn't have recognized heat energy if I hadn't studied Reams. Okay, so I'm using a lot more with carbons and heat energy to provide this to plants. And it doesn't take a lot. And so it really does help with the microbes. I've combined in some biochar And I find that that's helpful. That's more carbons in the soil, and that actually helps provide the resistance. So you get more energy from those magnetic lines of flow. So, you know, Rheem's laid out the parameters. I'm just adding and building onto it, actually. When we make fertility recommendations and go for that, we find that if we follow a program that way, we can dramatically see an improvement in the quality of the produce. You could taste the difference.
Well, John, is there anything I missed? Is there something you'd like to add?
I would like to offer some free articles I've written, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I have something called Introduction to Biological Farming, and it's 30 articles. And another one called Gardening for Nutrition. And those are both at aglabs.com. And it's under the, I think it's education tab, and they're free. So all you have to do is sign up. You get one per day for 30 days, and those are available.
It's great. I mean, I'm just so happy to see this world catching on to all this information. And John, I want to thank you for being a pioneer in helping to drive us all forward into a more healthful lifestyle.
Well, you're welcome, and I want to thank always our customers and the farmers who are out there on the front lines making a difference in the food supply, and so we owe them all a real debt of gratitude for that.
What a pleasure, John, and have a beautiful spring into summer here.
Okay, well, thank you, Robin, and thanks for what you're doing and sharing with people in your community and broader.
Bye. Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Many thanks to John Frank for devoting his life to bringing back nutrient-dense foods for us all. You know, Dr. Carrie Rheem spent a lot of time in a lab and researching soil, but the last few years of his life, he lectured on human health, and he helped an astounding number of folks come back from deadly diseases. His daughter, Betty, will be with us next week to talk about the human health part of his work. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, or sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasts are on iTunes and a few other social media sites, so just check us out. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.